Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I'm here in my sister's house. She was nice enough to let me stay the night. Believe it or not. Just in Dallas, speaking at my good buddy Mark Moss's event over the weekend. That was absolutely fantastic at Market Disruptors. And this weekend is our mastermind group. The mastermind I have with my good buddies Jason Hartman and Kenny McElroy right here in Dallas again. And we're really excited. Our mastermind is called The Collective, if you don't know. And so just wanted to plop down in my sister's, or actually my brother-in-law's office, and knock out a video here. We've got a lot to talk about, that is for sure. Today's whiteboard video, you guys are going to love that, or this evening on the George Gammon channel, on stagflation, and if the stagflation of the 2020s will be worse than the 1970s. One thing that is getting really bad is this economic indicator I was talking about in the title, and that is the level of worker productivity in the United States. Let me do a screen share and we'll check out this recent article from CNBC that shows this specific metric is at its worst level since 1947. And this economic indicator is a really big deal too. It's not one that you just brush off. Here we go. Title, worker output or labor productivity fell 7.5% in the first quarter of 2022. And I want to remind you that that coincides with GDP contracting by 1.4%. We had a negative GDP print, real GDP, but worker output fell 7.5% the first quarter, the biggest decline since 1947. So what this means is that American workers are producing far fewer goods and services. And again, when you look at that compared to, or in addition to the GDP, it makes sense. Now, what's interesting is we also have very low unemployment as measured by the government. I think the unemployment number is about as rigged as the CPI, but just assuming that their number is correct, or at least gives us a measurement as to if unemployment is going up or down. Unemployment has gone down recently. So then you say, well, how on earth can unemployment be down and the economy producing less stuff at the same time? And it's because of productivity falling the greatest degree since 1947. Key talking points. Worker productivity fell 7.5%. Okay, we talked about that. At the same time, labor costs as measured against productivity soared 11.6%. Oh, wow. Geez. So think about if you're an employer, your employees are producing fewer widgets, but yet you're paying them more. Bringing the, and that's not great for the employees that they're being paid more for producing less because this, of course, their income increase or their wage increase didn't keep pace with the rate of inflation for consumer goods and services. So their purchasing power is still going down. It's really a perfect storm of, I hate to say economic problems, but that's really what we're dealing with right now. And it's just, it's time to pay the fiddler. You know, the United States and Americans have had a free lunch for a long, long time. And that at some point, the game of musical chairs has to end. And that's just the reality of it. Weekly jobless claims increased to $200,000, well above Wall Street estimates. And I just want to point out, this is an article from a few days ago. It is what, May 10th day. So this is from the 5th. This would have been 5 days ago last week. So worker productivity fell, like we said, at its fastest pace since 47, so 75 years. They're attributing this to the U.S. struggling with surging cervasa sickness cases. You know, I've got Josh right here. At what point in time are they going to stop using that as an excuse? Yeah, exactly. He says until climate change takes over. I mean, this is just such a lame excuse. We're here in Texas, and I don't think I've seen one person wear a mask. I mean, no one is, other than the mainstream media and the people that live in this bubble of hypochondria on the coasts, you know, in California, New York. Other than that, nobody really is thinking about COVID too much in their daily lives right now. So to blame the lack of productivity. And by the way, how would surging cervasa sickness cases actually reduce productivity? You're still, it should be a measurement of how much people are producing at work. So if they're still going to work, then how? Is just a fear of the cervasa sickness hiding around the corner, forcing you to produce fewer widgets? Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Non-farm productivity is measured output against hours worked declined 7 point. See, again, hours worked. So just because someone's staying home from, let's just say they have a surging, because we have these surging cases, more people are staying home. Okay, fine. That, then those are hours that they did not work. So this is just how many widgets did you produce or services based on how many hours you actually were working. At the same time, unit labor costs, unit labor costs, right, yep, surged 11.6%, bringing the increase over the past four quarters to 7.2%, the biggest gain since third quarter. But again, that's not keeping pace with the rate of inflation. The metric calculates how much employers pay workers in salary and benefits per unit of output. So their unit of output is going down, therefore their wage per output going up, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're being paid more in nominal terms. Wall Street already looking for a 5.2% drop in productivity and an increase of 10.5%, but obviously the number was far worse than what their expectations were. Taken together, the numbers underline the inflation surge in the United States, which has seen prices rise at the fastest level in more than 40 years. A separate Labor Department report Thursday showed that jobless claims increased 200,000 for the week ending in April 30th, 19,000 gain from previous period. Rising, again, they're blaming this on rising cervasa sickness cases, runaway inflation, and Russia. So they're blaming the lack of productivity on Russia. Okay. Well, everything else is Putin's fault, so why not this?
Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today.
Fed Chairman Powell said at his post-meeting conference Wednesday, he still sees the U.S. in a strong position, though inflation must be tamed. So we have negative GDP of 1.4%. The economy is literally contracting. We have inflation at 8.5%, or at least what they'll admit to. We have productivity plummeting. Oh, and by the way, what is the, and you would, if you take it the next step, you say, okay, productivity declining, that means our trade deficit should be going up because we're producing less stuff. Therefore, we're exporting less stuff, but we're consuming just as much, if not more. Therefore, someone else has to consume the stuff that we aren't making ourselves. So you'd expect the trade deficit to explode higher. Looking at this chart, you can see just that. It's kind of a, you got to kind of turn the chart upside down, because the lower the number, or the more the trade deficit, the lower the number is here. So we started at a 40, what do we got here? That would be 40 billion in trade deficit going back to 2018. This is per month. And now we're almost at $120 billion per month as far as our trade deficit. And this makes a lot of sense when you look at the productivity numbers. So the question then becomes, okay, where do we go from here? And if productivity continues to decline, we produce less stuff, yet we continue to consume, you've got to assume that at some point that's going to break. And I think the breaking point most likely will be with asset prices declining. We saw on Friday the stock market down, I believe it's over 1,000% or 1,000 points on the Dow. And Monday, I believe what we were down yesterday, Josh, by 500-600 points on the Dow, and NASDAQ down even a greater percentage. And then today we started positive, but now we're in the red again. I was looking at my phone. It's down, the Dow is down about 100 points. So we're talking about less and less purchasing power unless the government comes in with more and more deficit spending, which is going directly to the consumer, which increases M2, increases the number of currency units chasing the goods and services, which would exacerbate inflation. My base case, as most of you know, is that going into Q3, Q4, we go down a little bit in the inflation, or at least the CPI. Now, I'm not saying that's negative. I'm just saying we go from, let's say, 9% down to 7% or 6%. And that's when the Fed is hiking to a point where I think they're going to, quote unquote, break the market. And once they do, they drop rates. And then we get this wave of deficit spending that makes March of 2020 look like a picnic, and or it looks like makes March of 2020 look like Paul Volcker. Let me put it that way. And that's what takes us to the next level, or the next stage of an inflationary wave, which I think will be stagflationary. And that's what I talked about in my video this evening, the whiteboard video that will be out this evening. And a lot of people push back, say, oh, we don't have stagflation because we have low unemployment. But if you think about why that matters, right, the definition, proper definition of stagflation is high unemployment, high inflation, negative GDP growth. And so if we have low inflation, low unemployment, they say, oh, well, that's not technically stagflation. Well, why is that important back in the 70s? Because that indicates a reduction of purchasing power in aggregate total for Americans. Okay. Well, today, I think the purchasing power is far more dependent on asset prices than income. So even if we have the unemployment rate low, we could have asset prices come down, and still that affects purchasing power to a greater degree than the high rate of unemployment that we saw in the 1970s. So I think that's kind of where we're headed midterm, long-term, short-term, maybe a little bit of disinflation. But the bottom line here is when you look at these economic numbers that we're getting and these metrics, that recession call or the yield curve predicting the recession is looking more and more probable. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism, and we'll see you on the next video.